Hi, and welcome to Conversations, a UCF College of Arts and Humanities podcast, where I interview faculty, artists, students, and community members involved in the UCF College of Arts and Humanities. In this series, I'll be speaking with people involved in the college's annual festival, UCF Celebrates the Arts, held from April 2nd through April 15th at Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts. Listen to behind-the-scenes stories from some of the exciting events happening at this year's festival, ranging from music, visual arts, theater, humanities, and more. My name is Madeline Mulford, and I'm a UCF student interning at the College of Arts and Humanities Communications Department. I decided to create this podcast to share the stories behind news, research, and events at the college, and raise awareness for the arts here on campus. My first guests of the series here today are composer Alex Bertzos and librettist Daniel Neer, who are together developing a new opera called He Who Gets Slapped. 9 concert selections from the opera will premiere at UCF Celebrates the Arts on April 6th at Steinmetz Hall. Alex Bertzos is the endowed chair of composition at UCF. His music has been performed across 4 continents by some of the world's foremost contemporary musicians and ensembles. Daniel Neer is a singing actor, librettist, and professor of singing based in New York City and Philadelphia. His libretti and lyrics have resulted in world premieres with American Opera Projects, Urban Arias, Experiments in Opera, and Opera Birmingham. Thank you both for joining me today. So I'm very excited about this event, and I just had to ask, what made you decide to write an opera in 2023?
Well, just to clarify up front, the only part of the opera will be performed at UCF Celebrates the Arts. It's still very much a work in development, but at UCF Celebrates the Arts, we're going to hear 5 arias and 4 instrumental selections from the piece, totaling about a half an hour in length. But in terms of what made us want to create an opera in 2020 is when the project actually started. I think it goes back to really the beginnings of our relationship. Daniel and I met in, what was it, Daniel, 2015? Is that correct?
That sounds correct.
Daniel was performing and had written a text for a piece that was performed at a concert in New York, and I had a piece that was also performed at a concert there. And afterwards, he reached out, and it turns out that we both admired the work of the other person, and so we got together. And after that, we had a number of different collaborations.
That's really wonderful. Would you be able to tell me a little bit about the plot of the opera, He Who Gets Slapped?
Yeah, sure. Well, the opera is based, the libretto story is based on a play by Leonid Andreev, the Russian playwright. The title of the play is He, or He Who Gets Slapped. And it's a very famous Russian play. It was made in, it was translated into English and performed on Broadway in something like 1912 or 1915, I think. But the story is very unique because it takes place backstage at a circus in sort of an unknown area. It's sort of backstage of any circus in any sort of rundown part of town of some city. And we meet this cast of characters who have, all of them have sort of escaped where they came from in search of meaning and have come together as this sort of ragtag group of performers. And we meet them at the very beginning, sort of with their enjoying their normal lives of being performers, stage performers, and circus, the people who manage the circus, and a lion tamer, and et cetera. And a stranger comes among them who seems very distraught and very emotionally upset, who is looking to join their group. And not being one to question backgrounds or question motives, they accept him. And that sort of is the beginning of the story, as we see the reasons why this person, who describes himself only as he won't tell them his name, and they don't ask. It's a don't ask, don't tell environment. And throughout the course of the story, we learn about how he got there, why he is there, and this sort of unraveling of his mind due to the things that happened to him before his arrival, which sort of tears at the fabric of this backstage family and this backstage community. That's putting it in a nutshell.
That's really fascinating. I looked at some of the examples of some of the arias that will be performed at UCF Celebrates the Arts on April 6th, and I felt like each of the songs gave a really intimate look at the characters' minds. What do you hope that UCF Celebrates the Arts attendance will take from those little snippets of the characters' internal lives?
Well, I think partially there's a practical answer to that question. Of course, what we want them to take home is the desire to see more. Since this is still a work in progress, the piano score is done, but it has not yet been fully orchestrated. This is the first 30 minutes that will be heard with orchestra. We want them to get excited to see the whole piece when it is staged. But beyond that, I think what we want is what any piece of musical theater wants, and that is for the audience to be moved, for them to recognize themselves in the characters, and for them to be curious about how these little windows into the drama will play out over the course of the entire production.
You know, and I would add to that too, that there's a couple factors in modern day life that are sort of going into this. I put some thought into this, and one of them is social media. You know, with this explosion of social media in the past 10 or 15 years, you would think that it would bring us all closer together. We're all in contact, we're posting content all the time, and yet, you know, we feel more isolated than ever. Of course, the pandemic did not help that. But, you know, it's interesting that with all the mechanisms we have to reach out and connect with one another, it's actually more of an isolating community, I feel. And politically in the U.S., with how divided we are, it's really interesting to hear, to notice that, first of all, people on both sides are not feeling heard. They're not feeling represented. They don't feel that their voice is being heard. And that's a commonality with all of these characters. It's the importance of being heard, the importance of dignity and respect, even for those people that, you know, are social outcasts or feel that they don't matter, the middle class or whatever that is, or whatever that group is in America. And what goes along with that too, I think, with this tribalism, is this lack of respect of one another. Of, you know, we see these videos of people losing their temper and these fights on airplanes, and even the State of the Union address. This has become commonplace to yell out and scream and call each other names. And I feel that what possibly the audience will see are these characters stopping and expressing in solitude in these arias, that they do feel this loneliness and they do feel this intent, this yearning to connect with other people in a meaningful way and to have that dignity and respect that all people should be afforded.
Absolutely. And I really feel like that ability to empathize with the characters through this combination of words, music, and drama really shows the importance of opera as a lasting art form. So I was curious, how do you think that opera has evolved over the centuries to become more relevant and engaging for today's audience?
That's an interesting question. In the early days of opera, I would say that it was both not particularly democratic and a much more artificial art form than it is now. The early composers of opera were all members of the upper classes who were doing this as an attempt to emulate ancient Greek drama. And they were geographically isolated to one location, and they were isolated in one society, to one particular societal strata. And they also struggled with the idea of how they could tell a story that involved music and singing and have that story feel natural. And so they tended to tell stories that already were very music focused, like the Orpheus myth, for example, in an attempt to have it make sense in the drama that the characters would sing. But this had the effect of actually having it be very artificial. And so if you look at early opera from the beginning of the 17th century, now it feels quite stilted, actually, as if there's a heavy veil between the performers on stage and the audience. The journey of opera since then, I would say, has been one of increasing flexibility in terms of how you can tell a story through this art form, and increasing democracy in terms of who it is meant for. We've journeyed from those early days to a time now where opera can encompass a wide variety of musical styles. There are operas being written that don't even have singing in them, but nonetheless are characterized by opera as opera. But what they all have in common is that they are all using music and drama together to communicate something. So it's become much more broad, and at the same time, it's become much more readily available, not only because members of all societal strata can go and see it, but because it is now accessible through other forms of media, online, on TV, in movie theaters, and so on and so forth. So I think that although we tend to think of opera as being something that is, you know, snooty and hoity-toity and upper class, or at least some people do, I think that opera has more to say to everyday people now than it ever has. And this is being reflected in the number of new operas and their popularity. Daniel, what would you add to that?
Well, I think technology has had a major impact in the revitalization. I mean, what we've seen in the past 20 and 30 years with the explosion of new opera is largely due to technology, but also to people finding interesting and innovative ways to tell stories and to storytell. And, you know, there was a crossover moment that just that happened collectively with opera composers and librettists, where really any story could be told. There was nothing that was off the table, certainly. A couple days ago, I was reading an article of a director that I worked with that I liked very much. And it was an interview, he's passed on now, but it was an interview from the late 70s with him, which was fascinating to read because he was directing at the Met then. And he was saying, you know, I think opera is really dead. I think it's really dying because there are no new storytellers coming along. All we do is regurgitate these same old operas over and over with new or the same productions. And he was really bemoaning, like, we have to reinvent what the word opera is and what that means. And that's exactly what happened after that interview from then on. I wish he was alive in the past 15 years to see what's happened, because people really did go back to the drawing board of saying, well, an opera is sort of a confluence of different art forms to tell a story. It's music, it's word, it's visuals, and technology all coming together into one source of storytelling. And when you get back to the basic definition of what that is, then the sky's the limit. And that's what we've seen. And interestingly, all of the challenges that come along, things like financial challenges of opera companies, spatial challenges of, like, you know, writing opera for a big theater versus a smaller space, all of these have done nothing but invigorate the creation, as is true with any arts movement. If you put some challenges and some roadblocks in there, all it does is make the artists more innovative to find different and creative ways to tell stories. And that's certainly what we've seen.
And new operas specifically are starting to become more popular than the old war horses that have been trotted out year after year by opera companies. Last year, for example, the operas that sold out most reliably at the Met Opera in New York were the new pieces by composers like Terence Blanchard and Matt O'Coin and Brett Dean. And that seems to be the zeitgeist right now. People want to experience this art form in a new way, and I hope that our piece can be a part of that.
Yeah, I would also say that people who say that they feel opera is old-fashioned or hoity-toity, I put those people into a category of people who say they didn't like a book, but then it turns out they never read it. Because if those people went to the opera nowadays, I think they would be very surprised. If you go to see a new opera, even an opera written 10, 20 years ago that's having a revival, the majority of the audience are folks in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. It is a very hip thing to do. It is something that people love to sink their teeth into, and I'm noticing a really big turnover in it. From the time when I started college and started going to big opera houses till now, it's very different, people that go to the opera. So people that think it's old fashioned haven't been to the opera recently. They should buy a ticket and go see something new. I think they'd be surprised.
They should buy a ticket specifically for April 6th, Steinmetz Hall.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. Save the date, y'all. So to really get a feel for what people will be experiencing on April 6th, can you describe the overall vibe of the performance using like mostly adjectives?
Well, the overall opera, at least for me, from a musical perspective, and this I think goes back to your question about how opera has changed and evolved historically, I would describe it as being fast-paced. For me, pacing is an incredibly important part of the equation of telling a story in music. And it's part of the reason I think that some listeners struggle with historical opera, because the pacing of that storytelling is so different from the pacing of storytelling in TV and film and other media that we encounter on an everyday basis. And so when I sat down to write this opera, you know, my very own opera in 2020, Daniel and I talked about this, and I said, look, I want this to be very fast-paced. I want it to have a lot of dialogue. I want it to be very fluid, and I want to move through a lot of material very quickly. This is a virtuosic thing to do, both for the librettist and for the composer, because it means that everything is going to be through-composed. It's not going to be a succession of musical numbers. It is going to be an ever-evolving tapestry of music and words. But the result is that we are going to be able to tell a lot more story and a lot more complex story than often you see told in opera. And so that was my biggest challenge as a composer, was how am I going to control the pacing of this project and have it move through this in a way that feels both satisfying in terms of how we move through the material, but also well-developed and, you know, organic for the material. And I hope that this preview performance of 30 minutes from the piece in April will be representative of that, even though this is a concert performance that consists of just excerpts from the larger piece. Daniel, what would your adjective be?
Oh, I would say even though there are terrible things that happen in the plot, I still really believe that the piece is an optimistic piece. I feel there's a lot of yearning in it. I feel there's a lot of hope. It's definitely epic. It has at times the feeling of a fable, like a story that, you know, that you're being taken on this big journey from beginning to end. And because so much of the piece is in a conversational pace, like Alex was talking about, I really do think it leads the listener into, the observer into the action of the piece. There are just these reflective moments of the arias where that pauses for a bit, but by and large, the story happens in real time. So there is a verismo quality to it too that I think is very captivating. So yeah, thought-provoking, yearning, hopeful, and I think overarching theme is that it is an optimistic piece. There's a window that we hope to include, an actual window into this dirty backstage area, and this window is sort of the representation of out there, of life out there, and to what is happening and the escape to out there. And that is the sort of ongoing theme of positivity that all the characters and hope that all the characters have, like a flame in their heart, I guess you could say.
So our goal is that when this opera is staged, listeners will be fully immersed from the first bars of music, and they will not emerge from that immersion for the entire duration of the opera. We want them to be absorbed 100% in the story. And the story itself, as well as the music and the way in which that story is told, will play a role in that.
So what are your next steps in creating the final product of He Who Gets Slapped? What would be the timeline of when audiences could expect to see the finished opera?
Well, we're still in the development process right now, as I said. This 30-minute concert performance with orchestra, with singers from Opera Orlando, that is a step in the process. The next step after that will be a complete piano workshop, which we hope to do this fall. That will give listeners an idea of the full scope and breadth of the piece in real time. And it will give us the opportunity to see how the entire piece lives and breathes in time, whether cuts are needed, and if so, when should we make cuts? When should we make musical or textual tweaks to what we have? What jokes land? What jokes don't land? What needs to be made more vigorous emotionally, and so on and so forth. From there, we can start to work our way towards a full staging of the piece. But I would say at this point that the earliest year for that would be probably 2026, and more likely 2027, because it will involve the orchestration of 3 hours of material, which is an enormous endeavor. And that can't really happen until after we've had the piano workshop and made whatever revisions are necessary.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this opera. And I think it will be really exciting for students to connect with these characters and be immersed in this experience. Is there anything else that you wanted to say?
Well, I just wanted to say that the fact that this concert performance on April 6th is part of our process means that the listeners are also a part of the process of developing the piece. I will be there in person for the performance. Daniel will be there in person for the performance. And so we hope that after listening, you come and talk to us and tell us what you liked about it, what you didn't like about it, what questions you have, what's making you curious, what you were passionate about that you saw on stage. You know, give us your thoughts and your feedback, because this is still a living, breathing work of art that is not yet in its final form. And everything that we learn from this performance will be incorporated into the future of the piece. That's what I would like to add.
Absolutely. And the one thing we haven't talked about is how incredible the music is. And I'm just going to crow on Alex's behalf. I'm a little bit biased because, of course, I'm his collaborator, and I am because I love his music. But I will say the other hat that I wear is as a performer. And whenever Alex sends back bits of music that he's written to the words, I'm listening to it with sort of all of my ears as a writer and a performer. And he's making these lyrics sound much better than I ever could have imagined in my life. So, you know, people who go are in for some just plain and simple, glorious music. It really is beautiful and incredibly soul-searching. Each of these characters, it really complements what's happening with them. And I'm very excited to see it. And I'm excited for people's reaction, because I just think it's such a beautiful thing that we're creating. And I'm so hopeful and happy about it and excited for what's coming.
Aw, shucks.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited to see it now. So I'll be sure to tell all my friends and everything. And I'm really, really excited. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Madeline.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Conversations. I'm Madeline Mulford, and we've been talking with composer Alex Bertsos and librettist Daniel Neer. Portions of their new opera, He Who Gets Slapped, will be performed by the UCF Symphony Orchestra and members of Opera Orlando at UCF Celebrates the Arts on April 6. You can learn more and get tickets at arts.ucf.edu/celebrates.